Nick DiGiulio here on the Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN. It's time for the Midnight Movie Reviews. Colin Suter, Eric Childress from eFilmCritic.com join me every week to talk about the new movies. So let's welcome them now. Here's Colin. Hi, Colin.
Hello there.
And here's Eric. Hi, Eric.
Hello.
So, Eric, did you end up, were you up or down?
Next question. Does that answer?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. I hate baseball so much.
Did you what did you bet on?
I was betting on a lot of games and whatnot. I think it was Saturday night. I lost 4-1.
Oh no!
4-1.
That's brutal, man.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
Well, you're back home now.
I am.
Yes.
Broke but home.
Broke. Well, all right. Well, listen. Explain, you guys, where you were tonight. There was a really cool special event at the Music Box. Tell us about it. Colin, why don't you start?
Yeah. Well, it was a double feature of two of our favorite movies, all of our favorite movies, Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz.
Yes.
And in between those films was a very wonderful, funny Q&A by Edgar Wright, Simon Pegg, and Nick Frost.
Nice.
And, yeah, just a great evening all around. You can't go wrong with that.
And now, I know that they had a screening of The World's End on Thursday night. Did you guys attend it?
No.
They haven't started getting a lot of press yet.
Go ahead.
I heard that people lined up at like 6 a.m. to get into that thing.
Wow.
And, you know, the Logan Theater, that's where it was at the Logan, you know, I think they only had it on one screen. And the Logan Theaters don't seat nearly as many people as, you know, the big screen, the Music Box.
Right.
So that thing filled up rather quickly. I mean, you know, I had friends who were waiting in line, you know, and who weren't that far back and who just could not get in after, like, you know, a very small amount of people got in. So,
yeah,
very coveted ticket, that one.
Well, you know, I mean, obviously it's really an highly anticipated movie. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
I can't wait to see it. I love these guys, and I love what they do. And so I'm really looking forward to The World's End. And they call it a trilogy. And I guess, you know, the only thing that holds the trilogy together, are you guys aware?
The Cornetto.
That's the
name. Yeah. Yep. Actually explained that at the Q&A night, is why it's being referred to as a trilogy. Some journalist or something at one of the junkets or something sort of, you know, made a reference to it, and you're calling it a trilogy, something that they were never really referring it as.
Yeah.
And Edgar Wright just basically said, yeah, it's a Cornetto. We're making our ice cream trilogy. Ice cream and, well, Colin, do you remember what he said it was? Ice cream and something else trilogy?
I couldn't hear it. But yeah, I know there was something else and I can't remember or I couldn't.
But
hear
for those
it,
people
yeah.
who don't know, that Cornetto is the British version of what do we call it here?
Drumstick.
Drumstick. You know, the ice cream cone that you get. It comes with the wafer cone, and it's got the little, like, the nuts and the chocolate and the ice cream on top of it, and you open it up and you peel the wrapper off, and it's called Drumstick here in America, but in across the sea it's called Cornetto, and it's featured in both Hot Fuzz and Shaun of the Dead, and obviously going to be featured in World's End. Anyway,
the only reason they have the Cornetto even in the other movies is because after Shaun of the Dead came out, I guess they all got free ice cream. Because
they figured
for Cornetto so right. prominently in the movie.
Right. so they put it in the second movie as well.
Right.
I like in Shaun of the Dead, it's sort of like what they eat after a hangover, after they've been drinking too much. And then there's that great gag in Hot Fuzz where where Nick Frost gets brain freeze.
Yes.
Oh man, those movies are so great. Both of those movies are so great. And I haven't seen Hot Fuzz in a while. It's been too long. And Shaun of the Dead I kind of watch monthly, but I haven't watched Hot Fuzz in a while. But God, that movie is so funny.
That movie's my jam. Hot Fuzz. That movie just. The last half hour of that movie, I just put on a continuous loop. Any day of the week.
I know.
I adore that movie.
I do too. I really do too. And you know, there's so many great actors in it, and so many great moments. And a great big bushy beard is one of my favorite one of my favorite lines. So obviously, August 23rd, World's End opens up, and if you're a fan of these movies of Shaun of the Dead and of Hot Fuzz, then clearly you're waiting. Anxiously to see this latest chapter. Okay, we've got some on-demand movies to talk about, and then we'll do the movies that have come out on the big screen for this weekend. And I understand, Colin, that you actually did venture out to see the Smurfs 2.
Ventured out on a Sunday morning when it was screened. Unshowered, unshaven, and hungover. The only way to see that film.
Well, we'll get a review of that coming
that
up
later.
Unshowered, what was the other?
Unshaven.
And hungover.
Yeah, pretty much.
Anybody know what a hangover means? Does it mean you're drunk? No, it means I was drunk yesterday. From school, one of my favorite lines from School of Rock.
Yep.
I don't care. I got the runs. Oh, man. That's another one of those movies. We're going to talk later on, and maybe I can get you guys, I can get your input on this. But later in the show, I wanted to mention this and get everybody's opinions on this. We're going to talk about movies that I call remote droppers. You know, meaning that no matter what part of the movie is on, no matter when it's on, the remote gets dropped and you watch it. And School of Rock is one of those for me. Absolutely. All right. Well, let's start with let's do our first on-demand movie, and we'll take a look at it. And it's Cockneys versus Zombies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do we need a description?
I think the title kind of says it all.
Yeah,
and it says here a gang of bank robbers fight their way out of a zombie infested London. I would imagine that this is going to be compared to Shaun of the Dead, would be my guess.
Yeah.
So has anybody seen this one?
Not me. No.
Oh, by the way, it's playing right now at the Music Box as we speak.
It is.
Yeah, it's a midnight show at the Music Box, but you can also get it on demand. There are some lovely quotes on the poster.
Okay.
It says a mad rollicking mashup of Shaun of the Dead and Lock, Stock. It's uproariously funny.
And that's think anything should be mixed with a Guy Ritchie movie.
Yeah, I agree.
That's a bad mix.
It's terrific. It delivers in every way that a zombie movie should. And I'm looking at the poster art. First of all, the actual font looks exactly like Shaun of the Dead.
Of the title, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's exactly like Shaun. I mean, mm-hmm. they clearly want to tap into that audience. There's no question about it. And so all right, well, we'll see about that one. Cockneys versus Zombies. I don't know. I just don't know anymore. All right, we have another zombie movie to talk about here.
Yeah.
That's available on demand, Dead Before Dawn.
Mm-hmm.
And it has nothing to do with Evil Dead, Dead by Dawn.
No.
Dead Before Dawn, tell us a little bit about that one, Eric.
Well, I could probably just sum it up for you in the tagline.
Yeah.
I'll give you the plot, but the tagline, I think, says all you need to know. Half zombie, half demon, all Zeman.
Zeman, all Zeman, Z-E-M-O-N-S.
Yeah.
Zeman, all
Zeman. A bunch
Zeman.
Of college kids accidentally unleash an evil curse, like they do, that causes people to kill themselves and turn into zombie demons, a.k.a. Zemans.
Right, and for some reason, Christopher Lloyd's in this.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he was in Eight-Legged Freaks, too.
Yeah,
so,
which I actually like that movie.
So do I.
I think Eight-Legged Freaks is a very entertaining movie, man.
Yeah.
That's a funny movie. I like that one. But Dead Before Dawn, it's clearly not going to be in 3D. Well, people do have 3D TVs now.
Yeah, but I don't think it's available on 3D.
Okay, but it's available on demand.
Yeah.
Available on demand, and it's a bunch of kids fighting Zemans.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. All right, you guys, hang on, okay? We got more on-demand movies to talk about. Colin and Eric are with me, and we are going to continue talking about movies. We'll take your phone calls at 312-981-7200. We got some more on-demand movies to talk about and the big screen stuff as well. Midnight movie reviews continue. We got a little late start tonight. We started at 1, but we're going to give you all the detailed reviews that we always do every week, tell you what you can watch on demand, which is what we're doing right now, and also movies that are in theaters. We also take your phone calls, 312-981-7200, Midnight Movie Reviews, Colin Suter and Eric Childress from eFilmCritic.com, and we welcome them back. Welcome back, gentlemen.
Hello.
All right, quick call here, and then we'll get back to the on-demand stuff. This is Rich and Glenn Allen on WGN. Hi, Rich.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I'd like to, I saw Drinking Buddies last week. I watched that on demand. I thought it was great.
Yeah, we talked about that one last week. Colin, you didn't see it yet, did you?
Not yet.
I haven't either.
Anxiously waiting.
But Eric, you sang the praises of it last week, correct?
Yeah, I love the movie. I think it's great. Definitely one of the best films of the summer.
Yeah, okay. And so, Rich, you got it on demand, huh?
Yeah, it reminded me of, and maybe this is too high a praise, but it reminded me of like a Neil LaBute movie or something like that. It was like a little play, you know, and it was just about two couples.
Right.
And drama ensues, you know?
Yeah. All right, so cool. I'm glad you liked it, Rich.
And I'd like to hear what you think of it soon enough. I know you're busy. So
I just Eric loved it. I just haven't had time to check it out yet, but I'm looking forward to it. And when I do see it, I will review it. All right, Rich?
All right, thanks.
All right, buddy.
Bye.
Take care. See ya. There you go. Someone who enjoyed Drinking Buddies, which is available on demand right now. All right, speaking of on demand, let's move on to the next one. Europa Report, which we talked about already, science fiction film that's available on demand, but they're saying it's new because it's going to be in theaters this week.
Yeah, it's not opening here in Chicago unless they're sneaking it somewhere, but it's in national theaters now. It's Magnolia Pictures release, and film I'm anxious to catch up on just because I'm hearing that it's like really smart science fiction, which is, you know, we see a lot of sci-fi movies go directly to on-demand and don't make it into theaters.
Yeah.
But I'm hearing really good things about this one, so I'm very curious to check it out.
Okay, Europa Report, if you're a sci-fi fan, that's also available on your on-demand. Let's move on to Hollywood and Wine. Hollywood and Wine, and I'm looking at the IMDb page for this, and it reads 2010 as the date. So this movie is 3 years old.
Yeah.
All right, well, tell us about it, Eric.
Well, this is a film co-directed by Chris Farley's brother, Kevin.
Yeah.
According to the description, I mean, it stars Chris Kattan and Nikki Whalen, who plays a woman who has the face of a movie star. Unfortunately, a fallen star tabloid queen already made it famous, and Hollywood's constant rejection due to what Diane refers to as, you know, two Jamie Stevens, which is the actress, has made her bitter, frustrated, and yes, whiny. Okay. I don't even want to continue. it's like clearly someone connected with the movie wrote this description. I've already lost interest in it. Although Nikki Whalen, people who don't, if you saw the movie Hall Pass, Nikki Whalen is the coffee shop attendant that Owen Wilson is kind of lusting after a little bit. And I recommend you see Hall Pass for that reason.
She is something, man.
Yeah, she is.
She really is. She's a knockout.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the rest of this. There's like Chaz Palminteri's in it, David Spade, and Norm MacDonald, and Pamela Anderson. You know, and then the star is Chris Kattan, a guy who I really like, but, man, is he just gone.
Yeah.
You know what I heard about him, though?
Hmm.
Is that, and I don't know, Colin, if you've heard about this either, he's become like a Bollywood star.
Really? Yeah.
He has. Yeah. He's become, like, he's like, huge. His like, he makes movies now in India.
Yeah.
Which I just find really...
I've heard that. I haven't seen any of the movies, but I have heard that.
I just find that really, really strange. Maybe they should re-release Corky Romano in India and see what happens.
Yeah. That and Monkey Bone.
Hey, I like Monkey Bone.
Monkey Bone's okay.
I like it. If you ever, by the way, if you ever listen to, you should, if you ever get the DVD of Monkey Bone, you really, really need to listen to Henry Selick's commentary on it.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, you know, pissed off Gilliam-esque stuff. Like, they took this movie away from me and blah, blah, blah. So it's fun to listen to. I still think it's a good movie, though. I still laugh at Monkey Bone. I think it's fun. But, yeah, Henry Selick got screwed on that one, so.
I'm actually going back to the plot summary for Hollywood and Wine for a second.
Yeah.
I said that someone connected with the movie might have written the plot description.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's the other director.
Oh, there's two directors on this.
Yeah. Kevin Farley is one, and Matt Berman is the other.
Matt Berman.
And he wrote the description for his own movie on IMDb.
Oh, good. Good. And it's now available on DVD. And, I enjoy that he actually... Wait a minute. Big Wind on... I'm looking at this guy, I'm looking at this guy's credits.
Yeah.
He did a movie called Big Wind on Campus, and it's also known as Fart the Movie.
Yeah, I think I have a copy of Fart the Movie somewhere around my house. Not joking.
Wait a minute. That's not the first movie to be called Fart the Movie.
I think it's the movie called Fart the Movie. There's more than one movie called Fart?
There's one made in the 80s, I'm pretty sure, that was also called Fart the Movie.
That wasn't Hot or something like that?
I'm so not joking about this.
It's F period A period R period T period, so it must stand for something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. What was the name of the movie? What was the name of the movie? Was it Ass? In Idiocracy?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, in Idiocracy.
It won 8 Oscars.
Yeah.
Including Best Screenplay.
Including Best Screenplay.
But Colin does it because I've looked up farts on IMDb. I'm glad we have gone this route. There's a short called Farts. There's a TV episode of a show called Farts called Gross. There's Terror at Blood Fart Lake.
Uh-huh.
Return to Blood Fart Lake.
Wow.
Laser Fart, which is a TV series. So just Fart from 2005.
Uh-huh.
There's a short called Jurassic Fart, a TV movie called Brain Fart, and something from 1957. Looks like a Swedish film. I don't know, something, Asha Nisse I Full Fart.
Oh, good.
So
there you
know,
go.
Maybe that means something in another language.
Those are all your yeah.
Yeah, I will get to the bottom of this. I know there's another one though. I've seen the video art for it. I worked at a video store that had it, and I'm gonna find.
Okay, we'll find out. We'll get down to the bottom of this fart stuff.
Yeah.
All right, Colin, Eric, hang on. We've got more movies to talk about, and we'll find out about the fart mystery as well. It's all coming up. Nick DiGilio here on the Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studio on the 7th floor of. Tribune Tower. I'm laughing because we've just taken a turn here during the midnight movie reviews, and I'm looking at some of the emails that have been sent around. Eric and Colin are with me. Hi, guys.
Hello.
All right. Well, we were going through the on-demand movies, which we will continue to do. And there's a film on demand that you can get called Hollywood and Wine. So we looked up one of the director's filmographies, and he made a movie called Big Wind on Campus, and it was also known as Fart the Movie. And then Colin was convinced that there was indeed a movie from the 80s when you worked in a video store, you saw it, called Fart the Movie. And you found it.
Found it. It's actually from 1990, I think, but,
okay.
Some of it. But it turns out it's only 30 minutes. And the only reason I found it was because I went to Google Images and just looked up Fart the Movie, and lo and behold, there are, you know, websites out there that, you know, have the video box for it. And, yeah, looks interesting.
We've literally become 12-year-old boys at this point. Fart jokes are always funny. I don't care. I don't care. And, you know, I screened Blazing Saddles last month for my film club, and during that scene, people were still falling off their chairs during the
Hey, Shaun of the Dead.
And Shaun of the Dead. Shaun of the Dead.
The most moving fart joke in cinema history.
Absolutely.
It's true.
Yes. It was beautiful, yes. And then Eric found a movie called called Thunderpants, which the description is, an 11-year-old boy's amazing ability to break wind leads him first to fame and then to death row before it helps him to fulfill his ambition of becoming an astronaut.
What? It's the greatest.
What could go wrong with that idea?
By the way, the director.
Look at the cast on this movie. Look at the cast on that movie. scroll down.
Yeah.
Check out that cast.
Paul Giamatti, Ned Beatty's in it.
Rupert Grint,
Stephen Fry, Simon Callow. My God. And it was directed by, I got to say, this is directed by Peter Hewitt, who has made some horrible movies, but also has made a couple of good ones. Like, he did The Borrowers, which I like. And he also did the second Bill and Ted, which I prefer to the first one.
Mm-hmm.
So, Thunder Pants. That could be the best description of a movie ever. An 11-year-old boy's amazing ability to break wind leads him first to fame and then to death row before it helps him to fulfill his ambition of becoming an astronaut.
That's the movie I think takes the turn in his career.
Are we? Yeah, that's what
I see. Hewitt's resume right now.
Yeah, I know, it's terrible. I know, because I think he followed
went from Thunderpants to Garfield right. to Zoom.
All right, we got to move. We got to move on. I'm telling you, that's the greatest description of a movie I've ever read in my life. I'm telling you right now. Okay. All right, Eric. The next one that's available on demand is. I wish it was Thunderpants, but it's not. It's The Lifeguard. Tell us about The Lifeguard.
Okay, Lifeguard. This is a film that premiered at Sundance this year. It's where I saw it. The plot description that's going to be very familiar to our listeners. It involves Kristen Bell plays a journalist in New York who, not really loving the, you know, she's not really getting the big stories, or they're not letting her do the story she wants to tell. So she quits and moves back to her hometown, and specifically back into her parents' house, where she's going to, you know, refigure out her life and what's the next direction she's going to take. In her 20s, and while she's there, she takes a job as a lifeguard at sort of a local, you know, residence community pool, where she forms a friendship with a young male teenager there that then gets a little more serious than just advice. There's another, you know, a lot of names in this movie. Kristen Bell, obviously, Mamie Gummer plays her best friend. Martin Starr, two people who live in the hometown. Amy Madigan plays her mom. Good cast, but this is a really horrible film.
Oh, really?
Really, really horrible. I mean, everything, like, for starters, describing the relationship between Kristen Bell's character and this teenager should immediately set off alarm bells. But there are other things that go on in this movie. Martin Starr's character, he's gay, and he makes some questionable moves. That it's the kind of movie where no one really takes responsibility for their questionable actions,
mm-hmm.
And yet it's done in sort of the guise of sort of almost a too cutesy kind of, you know, I'm figuring things out, so everything that, you know, all these decisions are okay kind of thing, when they're really sort of hurtful and damaging and something very dangerous at times.
Yeah.
The everything about this movie is a complete failure. Everything.
Wow. Okay. All right. That's The Lifeguard. Not to be confused with the classic movie from the 70s with Sam Elliott.
And Kathleen Quinlan, correct?
Yeah. Yes. Called Lifeguard. I remember that. I remember when that came out, man.
Yeah.
All the ladies were going nuts over Sam Elliott because he was
really?
Yeah, he was all hunky.
Well.
Yeah, so, all right.
Kristen Bell looks great in a swimsuit, but all I can say about the movie.
She's a beautiful girl, Kristen Bell.
Yes.
All right, well, now the next one I did not get a chance to watch, but I am going to watch it. No question about it. Colin, have you seen Passion?
I have not.
Okay, I haven't either, and I know that, Eric, you saw it. It's Brian De Palma's latest movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's a remake, and I remember you liking it for a while and then hating it at the end.
Did I say I was liking it for a while?
I said you were. I think you said you were with it for a little while, and then you hate. Well, there's something that happens in the last half hour where.
I think I probably said I had high hopes for it.
All right.
Going in, because I mean, my relationship with Mr. De Palma over the last decade or so has not been very fruitful. And this was supposed to be his sort of return to form. He's sort of going back to, you know, the early '80s, late '70s movies, your Sisters, Dress to Kill, blowout type movies. And it's a remake. It's a remake of a French film from a few years ago called Love Crime that featured Kristen Scott Thomas doing her French thing.
And that
was a thriller that I liked. It was the story of these two corporate women. It was basically sort of Working Girl with murder is basically sort of the best way to describe that movie. The boss sort of steals the underling's idea, and there's a little bit of sexual tension between them, and then it's all about, you know, revenge and plotting and all this kind of stuff. It seems like exactly the right kind of material for De Palma to tackle.
Yeah.
And to me, for one, the two women in the film, in De Palma's version, are Rachel McAdams as the boss and Noomi Rapace as the underling. For starters, that is woeful miscasting. I think even fans of the people, and there are fans of the movie, will have to admit that that's the casting doesn't work. That at the very least, those roles should have been switched. They don't really work as they are, so it immediately sort of puts things off. The first 40 minutes, there's not a whole lot going on other than the sort of the working girl type plot that I describe. And because I've seen Love Crime, there are very little, you know, ways of surprises, you know, in the story. It's just I'm sort of sitting there waiting for De Palma to sort of do his thing. The old De Palma that I love is just give me some great suspense sequences and the rest will, you know, at least fall into place. And that is where the movie really took a turn for the worse for me, is that when he finally gets down to sort of crafting the real big set piece in the movie, he does it in such a way that It's just not suspenseful. It seems silly. It seemed he was, you know, reaching for, you know, some sort of real style, unnecessarily complicated, sort of artful kind of way to do the suspense sequence that he did with much better panache in, like, Femme Fatale, even though I'm not a big fan of that movie, that he did much better in that and other films. And then when he gets to his finale, to me, the movie becomes absolutely laughable. It's really like sort of watching, you know, an old singer that's really past their prime and has had like three surgeries on their throat and can't really belt it out anymore. That's how I felt about this movie. It's down there, just sort of above Black Dahlia for me.
Wow. Okay. I can't
you'll
wait.
Love
to,
it, though.
I can't wait to see it, man.
Yeah, you'll love it.
I can't wait to see it. You're talking to a guy who watches Raising Kane every couple of months.
Raising Kane, yeah, you know, Raising Kane is a, you know, it's a goofy movie, but its goofiness is, you know, apparent in like every scene.
Yeah.
Here, you know, when by the time he gets to that level of goofiness,
yeah,
you're already 80 minutes in and committed to, you know, something that's not supposed, doesn't feel like he's going for that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
all
it
right.
just seems out of place and just watching like, oh, De Palma's going to go to this well again.
Yeah.
Okay, Brian, great. Thanks.
I love him, man.
Seen it.
I love him.
I'm putting De Palma on the put to bed list.
Okay. All right.
Sorry.
All right, so that's Passion, Brian De Palma's latest, available on demand. I'm probably going to watch it sometime this weekend for sure. All right. Now I can't believe this next one is actually happening. It's available on demand, and it's Top Cat the movie.
Yeah.
When was the last time anybody watched Top Cat?
I don't know.
I mean, when I was a kid.
I remember this project being announced a long time ago.
They announced this one a long time ago?
Yeah. And if you look at the IMDb days, 2011.
Yeah.
So it's been sitting out there for a while.
Mexico.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it says it features the voices of Rob Schneider. Like that's
yeah.
Rob Schneider and Danny Trejo.
Of course.
All right. Well, if you're a fan of Top Cat,
the
fantastic animated series, well, now there's Top Cat the movie. It's available on demand. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go to the last on demand film of the week, and that's called Touchy Feely. Tell me about this one.
Yeah, this is another film that premiered at Sundance. It was directed by Lynn Shelton, who did Hump Day. And was that the last movie, Hump Day?
I think.
Lynn Shelton?
I think it was her.
She did something since then, didn't she, Colin?
My sister's brother or something like that.
Oh, yeah. Your sister's
what was that called again?
Your sister's sister.
Yeah. Which we liked as well.
Yep.
Yeah. This one also stars Rosemary DeWitt. It's a very big cast, actually. Rosemary DeWitt, Ellen Page, Josh Pace, who's on Ray Donovan right now. Mm. Ron Livingston in the film, Allison Janney, a really big cast. And it's sort of the story of Rosemary DeWitt plays a massage therapist who one day, at some point on the job, realizes that the mirror touching or contact with people's skin makes her physically ill. So that puts a damper on her job. Meanwhile, her sister, played by Ellen Page, she's sort of sports a crush on Rosemary DeWitt's boyfriend, then there's stuff with Josh Pace's character, Rosemary DeWitt's brother, who he plays a dentist, who discovers he might have the magical powers to heal people. Mm-hmm. By working on their teeth, and all of a sudden all their pains are magically erased. So you have a lot of this stuff going on. It's not really sort of referred to as magic, just sort of the idea that contact with other people can either make you sick or make you completely healed. And to me, the film is kind of a roving, I wouldn't call it a mess, but just kind of a roving collection of just uninvolving things. The stuff of Rosemary DeWitt feels a little heavy, little heavy-handed, and never really develops into anything worthwhile. The best performance in the movie is given by Ellen Page, who is really terrific in one of the smaller roles in the film. Josh Pace has some funny moments as the sort of the very reserved dentist who now is becoming sort of a celebrity amongst his clientele. But the film, to me, that doesn't really sort of have the humor of Hump Day, or the real sort of the emotional involvement of your sister's sister. So this one's kind of a little misfire.
Okay, a little disappointment. There you go. All right, Touchy Feely, available on demand. Those are the on demand movies. We've got one more on demand movie to talk about, which we'll get to a little bit later on, because I believe all three of us have seen it, and that would be The Canyons, which is Paul Schrader's new movie. So we'll talk about that in a little bit. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, in fact, we'll review The Canyons, which you can see on demand right now. All right, quick break here on WGN, and we will be back. By the way, Drunks of the News and Straight Out of Context and all those, that's coming up later. Drunks of the News is sponsored by, of course, the greatest restaurant on the planet, the Gale Street Inn, and we'll do that in a little bit. But we'll take a break, and we'll come back. Nick DiGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN. Midnight Movie Reviews started an hour later tonight, but we're going to continue. We've got one more on-demand movie to talk about before we get to the movies that are available on the big screen, and we welcome Colin and Eric back. Welcome back, guys.
See you.
Hello.
All right, Colin, why don't you tell us about The Canyons?
All right. This is Lindsay Lohan's latest movie. She plays a girl who's living with a guy named Christian, who's played by porn actor James Dean. It's D-E-E-N. He's a bratty trust fund guy who is trying to get a film made. Tara's ex-boyfriend is a guy named Ryan, and Tara does him a favor by convincing Christian to hire Ryan to play the lead in his film. Little does Christian know that Tara and Ryan still have a thing going on the side, and Ryan still has deep feelings for her, whatever. And little does Tara know that Christian is cheating on her with an ex-girlfriend of his. Tara and Christian have an understanding that their, relationship is, openly sexual, one where, they have sex in front of people and have people over for one-nighters and such. But eventually jealousy takes hold of Christian, and soon he, spies on Tara and keeps track of her comings and goings. And, tries to have power over her, until things get way out of hand. So if this sounds like, a tired episode of a bad MTV soap opera, well, you'd be right, except that this has way more sex and nudity. But it's
pretty much just as empty and as big a time waster. If it wasn't written by Bret Easton Ellis or directed by Paul Schrader, no one would be talking about this as anything but a direct-to-video skin flick on, you know, late-night Cinemax. Because basically that's all it is. I don't care what name is on the poster as a director. If you watch this movie not knowing it was him, you'd swear it was another trust fund baby whose daddy got him a directing job. Is Lohan good? She's fine, I guess, considering there's not much for her to do except show up and say her lines, which she does convincingly enough. As for James Dean, he's no Sasha Gray. This is pretty much a big waste of time and not worth a dime of any of your on-demand dollars. So, no, not a good movie.
All right. And The Canyons, Eric?
Yeah, pretty much agree with a very large portion of that. I mean, track down any interview that Paul Schrader is giving about this movie, and you'll see him talk about the movie in a way that makes the film far more interesting than it actually seems. And I wonder if some of the people that are praising this movie read those interviews first and then latched on to what they think the movie is really about when it's really just not there on the screen. I mean, there's this whole sort of motif in the film about abandoned movie theaters and, you know, broken down movie theaters and whatnot. And, you know, to hear Schrader talk about that motif is pretty interesting. But in the movie, it's just sort of, you know, viewed as, you know, a really sort of poor metaphor for the characters. I don't even think it's reaching that far. Watching the film, to me, was like watching someone trying to open up a play for the big screen, but then forgot to bring the play along for the ride. James Dean in the film is not really good. You're sort of watching someone, you know, sort of just put on just sort of a stone face and just sort of try to be sleazy. There's this scene in the psychiatrist's office late in the film with Gus Van Sant that I think he opens up a little bit in that scene, and it is the kind of emotional vulnerability that I, you know, would have liked to have seen more of in this movie, but that's not Bret Easton Ellis' strong suit. I mean, the best thing ever, you know, he's associated with is when, you know, two women decided to make American Psycho into a black comedy and not, you know, a treatise on, you know, this kind of stuff that Ellis is known for. I mean, the film, it probably should have, you know, found a way to work with the talent that's behind the camera and at least to make it somewhat interesting. But the fact that this movie is not interesting at all is really the sort of the real big shock of the thing. You know, it's not that we're looking to trash another Lindsay Lohan movie. We're all kind of, you know, I think, you know, deep down, we're all kind of rooting for Lohan. It'd be nice to say some really positive things about her career, but you know, this film is going to get her some press, and maybe that'll lead to something good because this sure as hell ain't it.
Yeah, this movie's terrible. I watched it today. I couldn't believe it. I think it's the worst movie Paul Schrader's ever directed. And Bret Easton Ellis can go somewhere. I just, you know, the only thing, like you mentioned, I loved American Psycho, but I threw the book across the room, literally. And I hated Less Than Zero. I just, it's just not my thing. I don't like the characters. Lohan, you know, it continues to be depressing to watch her. I got to say, you know, as much of a fan as I was of Mean Girls, you know, on Freaky Friday, when she first hit the scene, I loved her. I thought she was great, and I thought she had an amazing career ahead of her. And just to see what this is, and she's got a producer credit on this movie. All the shots of the empty theaters and the rundown theaters, that doesn't mean anything. It just seems that he's searching for some sort of metaphor to put in there, you know, and this James Dean guy, stick to porn, you know, it's a really, really bad film. It's boring. I didn't care about anybody in it. You know, there are really no good performance. What the hell is Gus Van Sant's got three lines in the movie? I don't know. Did he lose a bet? You know,
then they're all just repeating what James Dean pretty much says.
Pretty much. Yeah. I mean, he must have taken him a half an hour to do the shoot,
mm-hmm.
You know, sit in this chair and repeat what this guy says and look like you're taking notes. But I thought this movie was horrible. And if anybody is, you know, there's a mild curiosity to see Lindsay Lohan in something, you know, of this nature. You know, I'm sure a lot of people are like, oh, there's a lot of sex and nudity in this movie. And I'm sure that'll draw some people to watch it. But once you watch it, it's just boring. And it's filled with really unlikable characters doing stupid things, and I just didn't care about anything. I really, really couldn't wait for this movie to end. I think it's terrible. So that's The Canyons. Guys, hang on. We got the big screen movies to talk about, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. There's right. Colin. There's Eric. And we'll continue with the Midnight Movie Reviews right after the news, which is coming up next. Nick DiGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Studios on the 7th floor of Trib Tower. All our regular features that you love on Friday nights, and I love too, are coming up. Drunks in the News, brought to you by the greatest restaurant on the planet, the Gale Street Inn, is coming up. Straight Out of Context and Nick D Show Spies. And we've got other fun things that we're going to be doing all the way till 5 a.m. This morning, keeping you company. The phone number is 312-981-7200. You can send texts to 24720, and you can check us out at facebook.com/Nick D Show. Colin Suter and Eric Childress are with me from efilmcritic.com, and we are talking movies. So, Colin.
Yep.
You were unshaven, unshowered, and hungover on a Sunday morning when you went to go see The Smurfs 2.
Yep.
Please describe.
Looked at the.
Please.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, please describe the experience.
Well, I woke up at the screening was at 10 a.m. I woke up at 9:30, looked at the clock, realized the screening was happening at the Regal Ford, whatever that's the Ford City, is that what it's called?
Ford City?
On Western Avenue.
Oh, no, 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 that's the City North.
City North.
Yeah,
sorry.
Ford City. I was going to say, you drove all the way to Ford City to see that movie?
No.
Okay, all right.
No,
yeah, City North. Yeah, all right.
Which is not far from my house. And I just thought, I got to go see the Smurfs movie. Eric and Nick have taken a few bullets with this Grown Ups 2 and Red 2. I know I said I wasn't going to do this, but I feel like I'm in the right shape and the right condition to go see Smurfs 2 right now. I didn't even RSVP. I just walked right in. Got my 3D glasses and sat between a couple of critics, and we all just kind of slowly sank in our seat as the movie proceeded.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll get to what the movie is. The Smurfs 2. All right. So in this one, we get a little backstory of Smurfette, who's voiced by Katy Perry. Turns out she was concocted by the evil Gargamel, played by Hank Azaria again. He was a long time ago, but she wound up in the Smurf village and became one of the damn Smurfs. So, yes, the only female Smurf was born from evil, for all the feminists out there taking notes. Anyway, Smurfette gets kidnapped by Gargamel because she knows a secret formula to turn Gargamel's two gray minions into real Smurfs, and eventually his plan is to take over the world. But it's up to three or four Smurfs from the village to rescue the Smurfs and stop them. By the way, one of them is Papa Smurf, voiced by Jonathan Winters, in his last role.
Oh.
Let that sink in for a moment. And there's even a little tribute to him at the end of the film.
Oh.
Yeah, this movie is dedicated to Jonathan Winters.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Oh, that's brutal.
Oh, yeah. And you got Neil Patrick Harris and Jemma Mays and... as the human characters, and how I loathe to say this, Brendan Gleeson plays Neil Patrick Harris's dad,
God.
And they, all three of them have to go to Paris to rescue Smurfette from Gargamel, who is now a world-renowned illusionist and still has the annoying cat by his side. And at one point, Brendan Gleeson is turned into a duck, so it, you know, we get a duck voiced by Brendan Gleeson for a long stretch of the film.
God!
Yeah. I'm not going to rock anybody's world by saying, or shatter anyone's expectations by saying that this is a piece of crap. Marginally, well, maybe it's about as good as The Canyons. I don't know which one I think is worse, but they're both
pretty god-awful. I'm just going to use this to just call out, call the parents out for this one. I hold all of you responsible for the existence of this film, for not learning to say no to your kids when they want to go see a movie that you know is going to be a piece of crap. We need to work on that, parents. And while I'm not a parent, I do work with kids. I work with kids who are, you know, the demographic that this movie is aiming towards. I say no to these kids all the time. And no is not a word that my students hear very often, I got to say. But, you know, it's not that hard. Once you start saying no to them, it's not that hard. When I was a kid, I wanted to go see Condor Man. All right. 6 years old, 7 years old, I wanted to see it. Looked like fun, looked kind of goofy and silly, and, you know, there weren't a lot of kids' movies coming out, but Disney put out a live-action movie called Condor Man. My parents refused to take me, absolutely refused, even when they could have taken me to see it on a double feature with a decent movie, The Aristocats. We went to see that at the Arlington Theater. Could have stayed and see Condor Man for free, but no. Nope, my parents said absolutely not. We're not going to go see that. And it's one of those things that, you know, annoyed me at the time, but I realized was the right thing to do and, you know, helped shape my taste in movies by shielding me from crap. And I'd like to see more parents taking that sort of proactive role in what their kids watch. And I know I'm getting on a soapbox here, and I know I'm preaching to the choir, but, you know, when we see Smurf, you know, Smurfs 3 is greenlit, by the way. That's coming. This isn't over. And it's because that first Smurfs movie made over $100 million. And I'm not holding the kids responsible. I'm holding the parents responsible. It's your fault this is happening. Knock it off. So,
Colin, you got room on that soapbox?
Yeah. What's that?
You got room on that soapbox for a second?
Oh, sure.
Okay. Well, first of all, the first Smurfs movie, you know, 100-some million domestically, over $500 million worldwide.
Oh.
So let that sink in. That's why you have a Smurfs 2 and a Smurfs 3. But if you look at the ads for the Smurfs 2 in the newspapers, there are a couple other people that we should call out here. Jill Radskin from the Boston Herald. Smurfs 2 is even more fun than the original.
Mm-hmm.
Terry Hart from The Family Channel. Smurftacular. Oh. Blue has never looked better. And Rusty Gattenby from KSTP-TV-ABC. If you have kids, this is the family movie to see this summer.
Wow. Wow. And is there, Colin, in this one, are there really inappropriate uses of the word Smurf?
Oh, like, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, like Smurf, Smurf you and stuff like that. And
no, nobody says Smurf. I don't think anybody says Smurf you. That would have actually made me laugh.
Yeah.
That actually would have like given it a half star more if somebody actually said that. That did not happen. But yeah, there's. I mean, the whole thing is inappropriate. I'm sorry. I mean, you know, like what. Like, what's the deal with only one female Smurf and she's like the son of evil she's born from this evil being?
Yeah.
First of all, like, what is that supposed to say?
That's from the cartoon,
you know,
though.
It's just, huh?
That's from the cartoon. Smurfette was originally an evil creation by Gargamel to
infiltrate. That don't make it right.
Yeah.
That don't make it right.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm just saying. And this is from director both Scooby-Doo movies, Raja Gosnell, who, if you look on his IMDb page on his profile picture, he's got a woman held captive next to him. And, you know, so like this guy, you know, just you want to talk about Fart the movie. That's all his movies are. I mean, they should just be called Fart 1, Fart 2, Fart 3, Fart 4. That's what this guy does.
Looking at this guy's filmography is unbelievable. He did the two Smurf movies. He did Beverly Hills Chihuahua. He did the remake of Yours,
film.
Yours, Mine, and Ours, Scooby-Doo 2, Scooby-Doo, Big Mama's House. No, his best movie has never been Kissed.
That's
That's his best movie.
That's an evil movie right there.
And Home Alone 3. Wow. And Never Been Kissed isn't very good. There were things about it that I liked. But out of that list, God.
Oy.
All right. Yeah. Well, Smurfs 2, everybody. No. Knock it off.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, cool. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll come back. And, we'll talk about what's it do from the Smurfs to a Woody Allen movie?
In Nick's world, a lateral move.
Yeah. In Nick's world, did you hear that, Colin? In Nick's world, a lateral move, he said. All right, hang on. Colin and Eric, thank you for taking the bullet, biting the bullet on that one. Colin, we appreciate it. Smurfs 2, not good. More movie reviews coming up. Nick DiGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN. Midnight movie reviews are continuing. We started late, but now we've got a couple of big movies here to talk about that are in the movie theaters right now. So the phone number is 312-981-7200. And Colin and Eric, welcome back, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
All right. Eric, tell us about Blue Jasmine.
Okay, well, this is Woody Allen's latest film. It stars Cate Blanchett as Jasmine, who is relocating to San Francisco to at least temporarily move in with her sister, played by Sally Hawkins. Turns out that Blanchett's character was living high in the hog, very rich lifestyle, thanks to her husband, played by Alec Baldwin. Who, as the movie begins to unravel a little bit through flashbacks, we discover was responsible for one of the many Madoff-like banking scandals that we've had over the years. Blanchett is still, Jasmine is still very much of the mindset that she's, still wants to live the lifestyle that she wants. She's not really happy about living in the small apartment that her sister lives under much more modest means. She has a boyfriend, played by Bobby Cannavale, her current boyfriend. Her previous boyfriend, or was her husband? Her husband actually was played by Andrew Dice Clay. We just discover again, this movie is told through present time and through flashbacks, we learn to discover why they are no longer together. This is a film, Woody Allen, I wouldn't call this a comedy by any means, but at the same time, I think this is probably Woody Allen's most interesting dramatic effort since Match Point. Blanchett is pretty extraordinary in this role. It's a tough character. It's not a very likable character. There are a lot of other actors we haven't even mentioned yet. Louis C.K. is in this movie. Peter Sarsgaard, your boy, is in this movie. It's a really interesting take on the a type of character that Woody Allen, clearly, I think a lot of us probably have a lot of disdain for these rich socialites that we're seeing way too many of now, thanks to reality television, just to see one of them unravel in a an unsympathetic manner is I think in some manner kind of pleasing in a way. It's not a film that you're going to feel a lot of sympathy for a lot of characters. In fact, the most sympathetic character in the movie may actually be Andrew Dice Clay, who in just a few short scenes is actually pretty terrific in this movie. It's not a film where you're watching Andrew Dice Clay and you're going, oh, I'm watching, you might at the beginning go, oh, it's Dice, but he's not really playing Dice. He's playing, a blue collar guy. Bobby Cannavale, I cannot see enough of this guy on television, movies, whatever. I love this guy, and he or she's playing kind of a blue collar Guido type character that is clearly in love with Sally Hawkins' character, but even she cannot decide what she wants now, thanks to the influence of Jasmine in her life. It's not a great picture. I think the performances are really good, and I kind of like the structure that Allen brings to the movie. This is time when Woody Allen is hit and miss, at least for some of us, I thought that this was one of the better ones.
All right, Colin?
Yeah, I liked it too. It's a pretty great showcase for Blanchett, who's always great, and she's definitely extraordinary here. I think the script kind of meanders and kind of repeats itself after a while, although I like Louis C.K., his character is not necessary here. There's like kind of a subplot involving him that sort of comes late in the movie. And it seems just kind of wedged in there, and it doesn't really add anything to it. Eric's right about Bobby Cannavale. I like him a lot. I think he's great in this movie. And I kept expecting him to kind of be the jerk, but he's in this movie just kind of the way his character is sort of written, but or is presented, I should say. But he's actually like. Everything he does, he's in the right for with what everybody's going through. He's sort of the voice of reason within all of this. And Andrew Dice Clay is very good, although it took me a while to adjust to his presence in a Woody Allen movie. It really did. It's just kind of an odd thing to see at first, but again, same thing. He's quite good in it, and. His character, again, is kind of the another voice of reason in this thing. Not a classic Woody Allen movie, but, if we're judging it against, the last, 10 or 13 years or whatever, or 15 years, this is definitely one of the better ones. And I do recommend it for all the Woody Allen fans out there.
I actually think this is the best movie he's made since Match Point, which is a film that I really like. And it was the last Woody Allen movie that I've really, really liked was Match Point. I think this is the best one since then. It's not great, but the performances in this movie are great. I think everybody in this movie is great. And Andrew Dice Clay is awesome in it. And the fact that Dice shows up in a Woody – I never thought I'd live to say that Andrew Dice Clay is in a Woody Allen movie. You know what I mean? He's terrific in it. He's absolutely terrific in it, as is all the performances in this movie are good. And Cate Blanchett is absolutely great in this film, and I'm convinced she's going to get an Oscar nomination for it. It's that kind of performance, and I think there are a couple of supporting performances in this movie that deserve nominations, not the least of which is Sally Hawkins, who I think is fantastic in this movie. It's just the acting carries this movie for me. It's got some of the stuff, it's got the Woody Allen stuff that that I hate in it. I will say this. I appreciate the way he wrote the working class characters, which he's not very good at writing, and most of the time is very condescending about that. You know what I mean? And in the past. Mm-hmm. And that's something that rubs me the wrong way about Allen's writing and about the way that he portrays certain characters. I've always had issues with that, but I got to say... that he wrote those characters really well, and they're performed really well. Bobby Cannavale is great, and so is Andrew Dice Clay. And most of the time, those kind of characters either don't exist or are misrepresented in Woody Allen movies. So I appreciated that. I think that this is definitely a showcase for Blanchett, and I'm trying to remember the last, you know who really works strongly in Woody Allen's movies and is always terrific in Woody Allen's is Judy Davis. And it reminded me of a role that Judy Davis could have played. And it had that sort of fierce quality that she brought, that Judy Davis brought to Husbands and Wives. It has that kind of fierceness to the performance. But just great acting all the way around. I read that Woody Allen wants his next movie to be a buddy comedy with him and Louis C.K. I'm not kidding. He wants to be in it and write and direct. He's writing it for Louis C.K. So that would be interesting to see. I would definitely, two different generations of New York comics. You know what I mean?
Although considering, when Louis his FX show started, the first season, I actually compared it to early Woody Allen.
Oh, so yeah.
They were sort of like short skits.
Yeah. In a way. And he uses Woody Allen's editor.
Yeah, okay, there you go. On
Louis. He uses Woody Allen's editor on Louis, and it has a definite feel of that, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I think this is the best. I think, you know, I was shocked because I'm not a big Woody Allen fan. But I think it's the best movie he's – I think it's the best movie he's made since Match Point. And again, not perfect. It's flawed. There are certain – and I agree with you, Colin, that you said it kind of meanders around, and there's the Louis C.K. subplot is a little bit weird. I actually – normally I get annoyed by movies that have the kind of structure where they just pop back and forth between times. Sometimes I like it, sometimes I don't. I thought the structure worked here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think everybody's great. And it's just a great cast doing really great work. And it was fun to watch. And again, Cate Blanchett is a beautiful role for her. Like, it's just, actresses would kill for this kind of role.
Yeah. So, and she doesn't overplay it. She plays it just the right way. No. She's got some sort of, some real breakdown moments, some moments that could have been played for, that other bad at worst actresses would have played for camp in a way.
Yep.
But I think she's, you're right. The performances are really the reason to see this movie.
Absolutely. There's no question about it. So I'm recommending it. I'm recommending a Woody Allen movie. Mark the tape. Blue Jasmine. All right. We got one more movie to talk about. You guys hang on. And it's called Two Guns with Denzel Washington and Mark Wahlberg. That's coming up right after the news, which is next. Nick DiGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN, wrapping up the Midnight Movie Reviews with our last review of the week. And, of course, we'll be back next week to review more films. It's Colin and Eric. Welcome back, guys.
Hello. Hello.
All righty, then. Colin, tell us about Two Guns.
All right. So this stars Mark Wahlberg and Denzel Washington, who at the start of the film play a pair of guys robbing a bank. But then we find out that that is actually part of a bigger plan involving a drug cartel played by Edward James Olmos. And what Wahlberg and Washington don't realize at the beginning of the film is that they're both working undercover. Washington is with the DEA, and Wahlberg is with the Navy. Bill Paxton is also in on this plot as the actual owner of the $43 million that gets robbed from the bank, and he's one of those bad guys who likes to give the same speech when he tortures someone. Paula Patton plays Washington's sometimes love interest, who is also with the DEA. And anyway, there are plot twists and double crossings and ulterior motives for every character that it almost gets hard to keep up, which is kind of why I'm sort of blowing off the plot synopsis here. So plot points are basically here to re-team Washington and Wahlberg as much as possible for, you know, what should be a fun little buddy comedy. But they're not really together as often as you might think in this movie. The film is very plot and character heavy, but the characters really aren't that memorable or interesting, and really neither is the plot. Wahlberg and Washington aren't even really playing characters. They're just playing tools of the story. But they don't really have much going on as people. Everything hinges on this $43 million, and I didn't care who had it or who got it. Everything just is kind of going back and forth, and it's just kind of a mess, I think. I think Washington and Wahlberg have some good moments together, but I think they're few and far between, and their banter isn't cleverly written enough to make this a memorable buddy movie. I think there's one funny scene involving chickens near the beginning, but that's about it. It's nice to see Fred Ward show up for a scene. I'd like to see that happen more often. This is a film that wants to be like a Walter Hill movie or a Tony Scott movie, and I don't really think it succeeds at all. I was kind of bored with this thing. I was checking my watch a lot, and I don't know. I didn't do it for me. I really don't recommend it.
Okay. Two Guns. Eric.
Yeah, Colin's absolutely right about this film being extraordinarily plot-heavy. The film does have sort of a redeeming quality. I think that Washington and Wahlberg are having fun, and they do have some good chemistry. But Colin sort of been pinpointed something that I didn't even recognize when I was watching the film, is that there's a good chunk of the middle of this movie where they're sort of on their own. They're not really together, and they're all sort of solving their own problems and sort of, you know, piecing together their portions of the plot that are eventually going to, you know, circle back and come back, you know, until they come back together. Watching this movie is like someone who, you know, like the screenwriter, like, watched Extreme Prejudice, but clearly only remembered the movie Bulletproof with Damon Wayans and Adam Sandler. the film, by the time that all the pieces out that the chessboard that they're trying to put together between the DEA and the corrupt Navy and the drug cartel and the CIA and all this other stuff that's going on, it's a good 70 minutes into the movie, and the movie's only like 105 minutes, you know, to begin with. And it really needs to sort of, you know, sort of put its, you know, pedal to the metal and really become something really nutty, you know, in the finale with all these sort of pieces coming together. And it just isn't. It's not very, very memorable at all. The finale is, you know, not very noteworthy. The only thing to really even to latch on to this movie is the chemistry between Washington and Wahlberg. You wish they would take that and put it into a better movie, a crazier movie, or a film directed by Walter Hill, for God's sakes. I can't recommend this movie.
I think I liked it a little bit more than you guys did, and I think it's because you both. I think it's this. You both mentioned it. You both mentioned this man's name when talking about this movie, and his name is Walter Hill. And there are things about this movie that I found very, very Walter Hill like, in a good way. I preferred Bullet to the Head, quite frankly, but. But if you're going to do like a knockoff of Walter Hill, this it could be a lot worse than this. Yeah, I mean, the plot is ridiculous. It's way too complicated. I thought some of the action sequences were really well done. I actually think this is a pretty well-directed film. The only movie that I saw that this guy directed was Contraband, which I didn't like at all. But I think this is well-directed. And, you know, there are other actors in this movie that should, you know, feel at home and have felt at home in Walter Hill movies. And I think Bill Paxton is great in this movie. I think he's terrific, and he hadn't been on screen in a while, Bill Paxton. I mean, except not on the big screen. He was in the Hatfields and McCoys, and he kicked ass in that. But, you know, it was nice to see him. And then Fred Ward, for God's sake. And Edward James Olmos is, you know, I think he's fun to watch in this. Robert Burke is in this movie. And these are guys that, you know, these are seasoned character actors that you would see in a good Walter Hill movie. And I'm not saying that that's what this is. I'm just saying that I think it's, you know, and I think Denzel and Mark Wahlberg have good chemistry. I think Paula Patton has one of the best nude scenes ever. I almost fell off my chair. She's amazing looking, that woman.
Mm-hmm.
Good Lord. So it's convoluted. There's too much stuff going on. It's not a perfect movie by any stretch of the imagination. Almost everything that you guys said, I sort of agree with, except I think it's well-directed enough, and there's enough cool stuff in it, and enough, you know, like cool character actors in it that made me smile, that I'm going to kind of recommend it. It's not great, but, you know, I think you could do a lot worse. So I'm kind of recommending Two Guns, Denzel Washington and Mark Wahlberg's new film. So there you go. All right, lots of stuff we talked about this week, and we got more to talk about next week. What do we got next week?
It's a big week. Next week, we got Elysium,
right?
Blomkamp's new movie. We have We're the Millers with Sudeikis and Aniston.
Mm-hmm.
We got Planes.
Yeah.
You know, who's the lucky bloke on that one? we got the Spectacular Now, the big Sundance hit from this year, and also Percy Jackson's Sea of Monsters.
Okay.
And Loveless, the Linda Loveless movie opens.
Oh yeah, that opens.
Well,
that opens too. Loveless, yes. Opens this week. Okay, who's behind We're the Millers? Is that anybody we know, or?
The guy who directed Dodgeball?
Oh,
stop it!
Yeah,
Dodgeball's funny.
Yeah,
I don't think so. All right, because the trailers for We're the Millers looks pretty funny.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know Jennifer Aniston stripping is all right in my book. So you know that's okay. But I'm kind of, I don't know, and I like Emma Roberts a lot. I think she's great, and I don't know. And, you know, Sudeikis rules, so I'm kind of looking forward to We're the Millers. I'm not really sure why. Also next week is the Flashback Horror Convention. Colin and Eric, you guys will be there, correct?
I might be there on Saturday.
Oh, okay. Colin?
Yeah.
I do not know.
Oh, all right. Well, okay. Well, I'm going
to
be there. I'll be there all weekend. It starts on Friday. We will be on, and we'll do the midnight movie reviews at midnight next week. And actually, next week we're on from 11 to 2 on Friday night. We're on from 11 to 2 right after a Cub game. So we're on from 11 to 2 a.m. So we'll do the midnight movie reviews at the regular time at midnight. And then we'll do reporting from the flashback convention as well. All right, guys, thanks very much. Always good to hear from you, and we'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good.
All right, there you go. There's Eric. There's Colin. And they'll be back again next week for the Midnight Movie Reviews.
The one bourbon, the one Scott, the one beer. Well, I ain't seen my baby since I don't
That's right. It's once again the time when we gather up all the stupid drunk stories of stupid drunk people doing stupid drunk stuff. We read them all together. Judge them, and then we are calling it Drunks in the News. Drunks in the News! And it's brought to you by the greatest restaurant on the planet, the Gale Street Inn. And we thank George and everybody at the Gale Street Inn for supporting us and being awesome. And, you know, I went there twice last week, had a fantastic meal. By the way, our event last Tuesday night with Patty Vasquez and myself did Bar Talk 4 at the Gale Street Inn. It was sold out. We raised over $4,000 for Autism Speaks, and it was just a great night. Another great night at the Gale Street Inn. So go to the Gale Street Inn, tell them Nick sent you, say hi to George, and we thank them for sponsoring Drunks in the News, and it is time to begin.
Want to tell you a story.
That's right.
About the house in blue.
Drunk! Number one, drunk number one. 63-year-old man attempting to drive a motorized shopping cart into the parking lot of a Fairbanks grocery store was arrested and charged with driving under the influence of alcohol on Wednesday night. Merrill Keith Moses of Fairbanks also was charged with refusal to submit to a chemical breath and shoplifting. A Fred Meyer West employee called police at 9:45 p.m. to report that an intoxicated Moses was attempting to drive the cart into traffic in the parking lot. The employee was worried that Moses would get hit by a vehicle. When an officer arrived, a store employee was holding onto the handlebars of the cart to keep the suspect from driving any further, said Sergeant Bruce Barnett of the police department. One Fred Meyer employee told police that Moses driving drunk on the cart is an ongoing problem in that store, and Moses has tried to run store employees over in the past when they have attempted to stop him on the cart. Every time they confront him, Moses is highly intoxicated. It did not appear that Moses was disabled or handicapped either. Moses was unable to perform field sobriety tests because of his high level of intoxication and couldn't stand without assistance, police said. A preliminary breath test measured his alcohol content at 0.31, four times the legal limit. Moses later refused to provide an official breath sample at police headquarters. When he was stopped, Moses had a box of Betty Crocker's cake mix and a box of chocolate chip cookies in the basket of the cart. Store employees said that he had not paid for them. Moses did not have any money to pay for the food and was subsequently charged with third-degree theft. Moses has a lengthy criminal history, including a 2011 DUI conviction in Delta Junction. He also has numerous convictions for domestic assault, drinking in public, open container, criminal trespass, and theft. He was arraigned on Thursday, and he's got a court set. He's got a date set for court.
As a look, man, I'm out, though.
Drunk number two. Drunk number two. An apparently intoxicated woman recently stumbled into one of the furniture stores, IKEA, in Israel, vomited on a couch, and then passed out on a bed after politely removing her shoes first. The employees were kind enough to let her sleep it off until the store closed, at which point a security guard woke her up so that she could leave the building. As for customers, they simply avoided the affected area. The customers simply didn't try out the bed, explains one. In a statement, IKEA says the woman, quote, felt unwell when she arrived at the store, and our people therefore permitted her to rest until she felt better. We wish her the best of health. In semi-related news, you can once again order a hot dog at IKEA stores in Russia. Okay.
So I go in my room, pack up my things, and
drunk number three! Drunk number three! Who would have guessed drinking at work would be encouraged by the state? A Portuguese court reportedly ordered a waste removal company to rehire a man who was fired for being drunk on the job and give him 14 months payback. Back pay. The judges ruled that since the man wasn't driving, he didn't do anything illegal, and he didn't break any company rules about alcohol consumption because the company hadn't written any. The judges also pointed out that being drunk on the job would make sanitation workers look happier and therefore more efficient to the public because, let's admit it, one judge said, their work is unpleasant. Drunk number four. Drunk number four. Drunk number four is our drunk reader. This is Elise. Elise with drunk number four.
This is Elise with Drunks in the News. In Providence, Rhode Island, a woman who says she was trying to cut through an alley had to be rescued early Friday morning after being wedged between two buildings. It happened near the corner of Meeting and Thayer Streets near Brown University around 1 a.m. Friday. An eyewitness said that they had heard the woman's cries for help and called 911. We were walking by and heard someone say, "Help me, I'm suffocating," Dan LaFonte said. She said that she was hurt and she couldn't move. It was initially thought that the voice was coming from a dumpster at the scene. However, when the dumpster was rolled away, the woman was discovered wedged between the FedEx building and another building less than a foot apart from each other. Rescue crews used saws and other heavy tools to breach the second building. According to a police report, Melora appears to be intoxicated and at the time couldn't recall how she became trapped in the alley. This is Elise reporting for Drunks in the News.
All righty then. Drunk number five. Drunk number five. Several customers at a Harris Township McDonald's were injured after a drive-thru accident early Friday morning. Emergency crews responded to a report of an accident involving an intoxicated driver at the restaurant at 4770 North Main Street just after 2 a.m. Once on the scene, investigators said they saw four vehicles that had sustained minor to moderate damage in the accident. According to Montgomery County Sheriff's deputies, the alleged drunk driver pulled into the restaurant's parking lot in a silver car where he sideswiped a vehicle that was sitting in the drive-thru line. That collision then apparently sent a second vehicle slamming into the vehicle in front of it, with damage continuing to yet another vehicle in line. Officers said three people were injured and the man was arrested. All righty then. We have to vote, okay? George, are you there? Did George hear? Did he hear? I guess he's not there. All right, we have to vote here, Craig. So it's the garbage man who got fired but then got his job back for being a happy drunk. We got the woman who got stuck between two buildings. Our friend Elise told us about that one. We got the man who in Fairbanks who got busted on a motorized shopping cart. We got the woman who threw up on a couch and fell asleep on a bed in an IKEA. And we got a drunk who causes some damage at a McDonald's drive-thru. Craig, wait a minute. Go ahead.
I have to go with the woman who got drunk at IKEA just because of how cool everyone at IKEA was with her being drunk and passing out in the bed. And just we just left her alone.
Yeah, let her sleep it off. Let her sleep it off.
So it's more a vote for that IKEA than for her.
Yeah, I'm going to go with that one, too. So that's our winner of this week. It's the woman who passes out in the IKEA. And the IKEA employees let her sleep it off. All right. Same drunk time, same drunk channel next week. For Drunks in the News. Drunks in the News. If you want to be a guest drunk reader, find the link to a funny drunk story online. Send it to ccollins@wgnradio.com. That's C-C-O-L-L-I-N-S. ccollins@wgnradio.com. Say, hey, Craig, I'd like to read this on the air. You'll read it on the air, and you'll get yourself a $50 gift card to the greatest restaurant on the planet, the Gale Street Inn. So, Elise, you got yourself a $50 gift certificate to the Gale Street Inn. So, remember, ccollins@wgnradio.com. And this is straight out of context. And you know how this works.
F-bomb.
You listen 24/7 to everybody on this radio station whenever anybody, and everybody's a target, whenever anybody says anything that you can pull out of context, and it sounds dirty, and it makes the inner 9-year-old and you laugh. Jot down the day, the time, who said it,
out of context,
and send it to ccollins@wgnradio.com. Anything that makes you giggle, anything that sounds dirty, pull it out of context. And again, tell us who said it, what time, and all that good stuff, and send it to ccollins@wgnradio.com. All right, let's get this going. How many we got?
We actually have six this week.
Six.
The first one came from Wild Bill, and this is Gary Meyer.
plus, once you put your hand down in there, you got some grease.
The next one came from Wild Bill, and it is also Gary Meyer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the stuff that goes down in there and you never get it out.
Okay.
This is from Kristen Decker, who was on a little bit earlier, and this is Steve Cochran.
Aren't afraid to make out with it, to stick their face in it.
Okay. There you go.
All right, Decker.
From Wild Bill again, it's Gary Meyer.
All right.
By the way, I plugged my snake hole.
Okay.
From Tim, this is Mary Vandeveld on your show this the other day.
And how do you get your mouth around it?
Talking about the Nick D burger. Yeah. Okay, next.
In the same vein, this is from Ed, and this is actually you.
I'm anxious
and
for
we'll
that.
We'll do it on the air. I'm glad you guys are anxious about it. Okay, there you go. And?
That's it, actually.
Oh, that's it. Yeah. Okay, well, there you go. All right. What do you do? No one else can dance. That's right. Once again, C. Collins at WGNRadio.com. Whenever I am mentioned or the show is mentioned, whenever they talk about me 24-7 on this station, jot down the day, the time, who said it, and then you're a Nick D. Show spy. All right? Send all those requests and the out of context, C. Collins at WGNRadio.com. What do we got?
We have two this week. They're both kind of quick ones. The first one came from Wild Bill, and this is Gary.
One of the best episodes of television ever aired earlier this week. So says Nick the Digital, who was in for Bill Leff. Find out the show and the actor responsible later tonight.
Apparently, you're always the Digital now.
I know. Gary has told me in the hallway, I am now Nick the Digital. So I don't know, you know, what that means, but in Gary's world, it makes sense. Okay,
apparently.
Next.
This is the last one. It's from Diana Naperville, and this is a spy from the Bill Leff show, I believe.
Okay.
I want to say quickly, Carmen, because Nick DiGilio walked in here during the break and was telling us that he had a Mickey Morandini jersey.
Actually, when he walked in, I thought it was Mickey Morandini.
A huge Mickey Morandini fan. That's pretty good.
That's actually a Cubs rain delay.
That's Cubs rain delay. That was Carmen and Burnfield, and they were talking about weird and unusual jerseys, and I had to tell them that I have a Mickey Morandini jersey, and I'm proud of it. All right, there you go.
Like us.
So once again, listen 24-7, and whenever I am mentioned or the show is mentioned in any capacity, jot down the day, the time, send it to C. Collins at WGNRadio.com. Whenever anybody says something that you can pull out of context and it sounds vaguely dirty and it makes you giggle, again, jot down the day, the time, send it to C. Collins at WGNRadio.com. And if you want to be a part of Drunks in the News and be a drunk reader, get yourself a $50 gift card to Gale Street Inn and be on the Drunks in the News segment. Find a funny drunk story, a link, send it to C. Collins at WGNRadio.com. That's C-C-O-L-L-I-N-S at WGNRadio.com. We shall return with the news.